Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Real Nerds Podcast. I love movies, and my name is Ryan. I am joined by
Brad. I'm here too.
And he also likes movies. In fact, was our friendship conceived on love of movies, or was it just me copying geometry off you?
Probably the friendship came from going to see movies, I think.
Like, I think so too.
The game store. And
yeah. However, I'm kind of pissed because I only got a C in geometry from copying off of you. So
I don't think I did better.
I know. That's what I mean. You should have done better. You're smarter than I am. But yeah, our love of movies goes way far back, and our love for video games goes really far back. We just had a conversation about how video games have become collector things now that we never thought about when we were younger. But now, you know.
Yeah, it's like comics had already been around for, like, what, 40 years ahead of
us?
Yeah,
yeah.
But, like, we kind of were birthed at the rise of video games.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that we held on to is now becoming stupidly valuable.
It is, and it's fun. You know, I kick myself when I think about how I had all the original Mega Man cartridges and trying to find those again. I mean, I don't know. They're probably $70, $80 the minimum.
I mean, I think X2 or something for the SNES is like $300 or something.
Oh my gosh.
In the box. Maybe $1,000. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, yeah, but it's cool. Like, I love that what I love, people love too. It's, you know, we did this panel at the last Fan Expo about being your experiences you have in movies. And those are what I hang on to. I mean, I always remember certain experiences in movies. And I think that's what makes it great to see movies, is that experience you have with other people. Last week, the Captain America movie came out, and I remember when Bucky shows up and people cheered in my theater. Like, I still love that stuff. I love seeing that. This week we saw a totally different movie, though. We saw The Monkey, based on a short story by Stephen King. Stay tuned. We'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, then spoil the movie. We'll talk about the big movie news of the week and stuff we've been watching throughout the week. You know, we do movies. That's what we do. And I love going to movies. I love getting the popcorn. And why is it that, you know, even candy tastes better at movies? I don't know what it is. It just must be the experience, the smells. And, you know, the one thing I do miss in movies, sorry, it's my phone, is the film reels going starting up.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, this is the first time I've come to your new place, and I'm looking at all your movies.
Yeah.
They're all over the room here. And
yeah.
You have this future, it's going to be like this amazing single wall of movies.
Yeah.
As soon as you rectify the potential collapse that's happening with what you've already started.
Brad, this week we saw The Monkey. Do you recommend The Monkey?
Yeah, it's pretty fun. Definitely like some of the funnest gory kills I've seen in a while. I'm just a little bummed by the twist ending. Like, didn't really grab, like, it didn't excite me. I was like, okay. But yeah, like, it's just a fun, gory romp.
I had a lot of fun in this movie. It's definitely the most fun I think I had in movies this year so far. And for an Osgood Perkins movie, it moved quickly. He's known for kind of, you know, deliberate long legs, pacing. Slow, yeah. Gretel and Hansel.
Mysterious, but this is like fun.
Yeah,
it's happy-go-lucky.
Yeah. And it's funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, when he plays like the uncle or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The swinging uncle. Yeah, so good.
Here's the trailer for The Monkey.
That's odd. I don't remember locking this.
You wouldn't have to remember if my aunt had a wind-up toy monkey at the yard sale.
Oh, not a cherished childhood memory now, was it?
No, 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 no!
The coroner said it was an accident, but it was no accident. It was a monkey. When I was a kid, my twin brother and I found something that loved to kill. I did everything I could to make it go the fuck away. But it had other plans. Hello, brother.
Bill.
The monkey that likes killing our family. It's back. Must be vanquished.
Why don't you vanquish it, huh, Bill?
Wait!
We have been chosen to witness its power over life and death in its most devious ways.
Toy monkey?
It's evil. It's basically the devil.
Everybody dies. And that's life.
Oh, fuck.
The movie literally opens with Adam Scott. Didn't know he was in the movie either. He has a little cameo at the beginning, and he's warning this shopkeeper, a pawnbroker, to take this monkey, and he has blood all over him. And he says, hey, you know, don't ask me questions about this monkey. And it's a little monkey drumming guy. And whenever he plays his song and he drops his right arm the last time, something bad happens. It's like freak accident.
Did you know it's the drumming monkey because the symbol monkey is owned by Disney?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
But he did a really great job. That monkey's creepy in it.
Yeah, but I'm just like, how does Disney own that? Because, like, wasn't that, like, from Monkey Shines?
Well, it's originally a toy.
It's a real toy.
Yeah,
That Disney didn't make.
I have no
but
idea.
But now they own the image of a...
Oh, because it's in Toy Story.
So they took some other guy's design that's been, like, a real toy.
It.
They're like, in Toy Story, they're like, it's ours now.
I'm guessing they paid for it. That's my guess. I don't know. I didn't know Disney owned it. I thought he was just going for, like, something different.
Yeah, no, they couldn't use that.
But it ends up working out well.
Cat's trying to get in that room.
I know, it always does. Because I love, and he shoots it really cool, because he always shoots from a low angle. The drumstick spins before it drops, and it's really well shot. Anyway, so you learn that Adam Scott it disappears, and his two twin boys, Bill is a jerk, and Hal is kind of a quiet, gets bullied a lot.
Yeah.
And one day they find that toy monkey, and they don't know what it is. They turn the key, and, their babysitter gets her head chopped off at Benihana's.
Yep.
In a great little moment. And, you know, I was actually surprised how long the boys were at the beginning of it before the main character kind of came in, or the lead actor.
Yeah, the whole setup for, like, them as kids is a good chunk of the movie.
Yeah. And they become estranged because he gets picked on at school by his brother with bananas because he told him to suck a banana like a dick or something.
Yeah. The Hal finds like the monkey in his bag and he gets like teased in class from like a group of girls that are like just harassing him.
Yeah, because it has this kind of coming of age tell at the beginning. And so Hal comes home and he's pissed off and he twists the key and he tells the monkey to kill his brother and it ends up killing his mom.
Yeah, because he doesn't know yet that it's random. It's not like the monkey doesn't do your bidding.
So him and his brother become estranged and it carries over into Hal's grown-up life where he's a cashier at a grocery store. He has a son that he really doesn't.
You have a kid. Oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah, his boss was funny.
His younger boss. Yeah.
He keeps on saying that sucks. Even when he died. So then he has to spend this time with his son. He finds out that the monkey is back. And it leads to him finding out that his brother Hal is...
Bill.
I mean, yeah, Bill. Sorry. Bill is... twisting
the key. Did we say they're twins, by the way?
Yeah. Did I? No, they're twins. One's older and he ate the placenta.
Yeah, he's like a couple seconds older or something. Yeah.
So he turns the key and hopes that it will kill Hal.
Yeah.
Because he blames Hal for his mom dying. And it doesn't. It ends up killing like half the town, which was a great reveal that they're leaving and you see all these people that are dead. Like the one dude who has a surfboard through him and he's stuck to a tree. That's totally at the end of the movie, but
yeah.
That's basically the movie.
Well, Hal has to, he's trying to take his son, away. Like, I don't know, whoever he married and got divorced from, they had a kid and her new husband, played by Elijah Wood,
Who's another just
is like some self-help guy
and he's a total douche
and he wants to adopt the kid and like just force Hal completely out of their lives. So I guess he agrees to let that happen, but first he wants to take his kid to like this horror amusement park or something.
But
on the way they find out that their aunt who raised them after their mom died, she's dead and all her belongings are being auctioned off, and he's like, oh, I gotta go get this monkey and keep it away from, I guess, people or something. But the monkey's not there. It turns out Bill somehow got the key back, even though it fell down the well.
Yeah.
Or he kept it before they put, like, he snuck it.
Yeah, something like that.
So he's had the key for, like, most of his adult life, but he's been waiting for the monkey to walk its way back.
Yeah, maybe they did show a scene of that, but I remember seeing him go down in the well, but I can't remember. Oh, he did find the key in the well.
Oh, yeah, I guess the monkey left it there, why did the monkey leave it there? Like, why wouldn't he just, like, keep the key and find him?
Yeah, what's cool about the monkey and the monkey is there's really no explanation for it. It's just he's a demon fucking thing that kills this people.
Yeah, there's no backstory of, like, oh, it was inhabited by, like, a serial killer or something.
Yeah, he didn't pick it up at a shop that sells Froger, you know, it's just,
yeah,
it's just an evil monkey.
But yeah, Bill spent most of his adult life trying to find the monkey to put the key in. And then, there's also like this other kid in town who's like his henchman. Yeah. So he like sends him out to all these like garage sales to try and find the monkey for him.
Yeah, which is a weird reveal because he goes to that estate sale for his aunt and he finds a monkey and he really likes it. And then you realize that, you know, he gave it to Hal for 15 or Bill for 15 bucks, but it reminds him of his dad. So he tries to get it back.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of funny and a doofus as a cop. And his death is really fun.
Yeah.
Gruesome. And I love that you're with Hal in that part. He's what the fuck? but yeah, it has really creative kills in it. You know, the Chip, the uncle, gets stampeded by 67 wild horses.
Yeah. He's just a sleeping bag full of like cherry pie, basically.
And even the aunt, when her head catches on fire and she runs outside and her death is she like stabs herself in the head on a,
which like she's in the kitchen, she just like put her head in the sink at least, but no, she freaking runs outside and gets impaled in the face by a
it's for comedic sign. Effect. You know, I really like too that they set up really early in the movie that when Hal goes to shake Bill's hand, he puts it through his hair, like, you can't
psych.
The psych. And then at the end of the movie, when they have this reconciliation and he goes to shake his hand, he does it 2 more times. and they play this big swelling, you know, makeup music, and each time it's funny. And you'd think it'd be stupid, but my whole audience would couldn't stop laughing.
I thought Hal was going to do it. Yeah. Revenge on him, but yeah, no.
And then, you know, they also set up, too, at the beginning of the movie, Hal had this dream where he was going to drop his mom's bowling ball on Bill's head. Yeah. And then that's how Bill dies at the end of the movie. It just says Lois, and his whole head is smashed in.
I actually saw it twice, and I guess the projector at the Mills is a lot dimmer. So, like, when the bowling ball fell off of, like, the Rube Goldberg machine or whatever, and it just fell in the into this blank space and then exploded and destroyed his face.
The cannon.
I was like, was there a cannon in the room? Like, I don't understand what's going on. But yeah, I read online, like, Osgood Perkins, like, his goal was to make all the deaths, like, Wile E. Coyote-style cartoonish deaths.
Oh, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, so, yeah, stuff like that.
Because even the lady who gets blasted by the shotgun, she gets blown to pieces.
Yeah, like, you know, a shotgun blast, yeah. Like, would just...
I mean, it'll hurt you pretty bad, but...
But she gets, like, disintegrated. Yeah. Like, she went through, like, a Star Trek transporter.
But, you know, I really had fun with this movie, because it was funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, like, when the pool gets electrocuted, yeah. The lady dives into it, she just explodes.
Yeah.
Like, she would vibrate and, like, drown.
Yeah, or just, like, float to the top or something.
But
I don't know.
In this movie, yeah, she just full out, and, like, she got hit with dynamite.
Because her leg flies, and I think Hal even says, was that her fucking leg?
Yeah. He ducks and, like, splatters on the wall behind him. And then he goes into, like, the motel room and just screams into his pillow.
I had a lot of fun in this movie. And then the ending was, I mean, I already talked about it, but there's all these people that are dead because Bill kept turning the key, hoping to get Hal. And then I didn't understand the ghost guy.
Well, they, a number of times before that, throughout the movie, Hal, like, references some quote about, like, the man on the white horse.
Oh, I don't remember that.
And so, yeah, he physically appears at the end. But yeah, it's like, you really have to keep up with the movie to remember it. Because, yeah, the first time I saw it, I was like, what is this a reference to? And the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, yeah, he's been talking about this. It's some reference to death or something, or some poem that I don't know about.
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, fudge. But it's what I liked about it, though, he just went for it. You know, I think I liked Long Legs, but I thought the ending, he kind of took the easy way out where, you know, the one coworker of the FBI agent kills his wife and stuff. This one, you know, they had that weird kaleidoscope scene where he's falling into the well, and there's no rhyme or reason behind the monkey. And, you know, I love the song it's playing, and it's just fun. Like, it's just a really fun movie.
Yeah, it just feels like an excuse to have just, like, a bunch of Wile E. Coyote deaths.
Yeah.
Because, like, finding out that the brother's been turning the key and it's been, like, killing everyone in town, he's been trying to get his brother. I don't know, it just didn't seem, like, that interesting to me.
It's not, because you could see where it's going, but getting there is still fun.
Yeah.
Because even when...
And also, like, why does he live in, like, an old abandoned phone factory? Like, what's his job that he's able to afford to do all this stuff?
I have no idea.
Shit, I just lost it.
But even at the babysitter's funeral, the pastor, you get a little taste of it in the trailer, but he's even funnier. He's like, oh, fuck. Trying to figure out a way to say it without talking about she lost her head.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah, that's... It is what it is.
It is. It's a fun movie. It could end up on my top 10 movies of the year. Just because it's so insane. And you know what? Stephen King said that, too. He says this movie is batshit crazy. And when the original writer of the short story says that, it makes me wonder what the original short story is.
Yeah.
I've never read it, so...
Also, like, when Bill, like, gets mad and, like, forces the monkey to, like he tries to get to, like, focus on Bill, and he, like, fights with the monkey to get the... stick to come down, and then, like, it stirs up so much shit. Like, the monkey gets... It was cool that, like, the monkey's facial expression kind of changed a bit to where, like, he was a little scared. But, like, so the plane crashes, and they're in a church, and, like, a bride and groom, like, fall through the ceiling?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
Oh.
Were they in a church?
No. Earlier, remember...
Were they skydiving?
His son was saying, look, you can even get married. That'd be fun. So it's a callback to his son showing him the pamphlet of being married and skydiving.
So they were separate from the plane.
Yeah, so they were skydiving from the plane that crashed.
Okay.
So it's a really big setup callback to his son pulling up the pamphlet for being married while you're skydiving. Because that's why there's a bride, a priest, and then the groom.
Yeah, again, the projector, it just looked like they were getting married up there, and then the floor collapsed, and she just got caught in some, like, wiring or something.
Oh, yeah, no, it's fun. It's definitely a movie you need repeat viewings of, because, you know, now that you say Wile E. Coyote, it makes a lot of sense. Because each one is, if Wile E. Coyote got hit by a bowling ball, you know, his head would just, you know, like rubber band. Here they explode.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love it. People should go see it. Hey, Corinne, go see The Monkey. This is a big news story of the week.
It's real news!
Gene Hackman passed away this week.
Yeah.
Suspiciously. Yeah, I mean, but he's 95. I mean, the sad thing is when I read the story, I think that he actually died because they did a read on his pacemaker and it stopped 9 days before they found him. And they found him in the kitchen and they found his wife in the bathroom with pills all around her. So it sounds a lot like that he died and then she decided that she was going to die too.
Poor out the dog, though.
He was inside a kennel, so I think they forgot to let him out, or she did.
Or they died and then he couldn't get food?
Yeah.
But they have another dog.
Yeah, they had two dogs roaming that were running around that were fine, and they didn't have any signs of carbon monoxide, so I'm guessing that's how it's going to shake out. But when you go think back at his career, he's in so many movies, in a wide breadth of movies. I mean, whether it's westerns, comedies, dramas. Obviously, he won an Academy Award for The French Connection and... Let me look it up.
Unforgiven?
Maybe Unforgiven. But he's... You know, I read that he didn't do a movie for like 20 years.
Yeah. Not sure he needed to.
Oh, no. You can retire. It's just... It seems that it hasn't been that long. And... Yeah, but when you're in so many iconic movies, that, you know, you just assume that they're always going to be there.
Someone should do a fan cast of, like, if he'd still been working, like, what would you have casted him in? Because obviously, I think part of his retirement was, like, he just wasn't seeing a lot of good scripts coming through.
Yeah.
So, I wonder if there's something that he wished he stuck around for.
Oh, that's a good question.
To possibly get casted in.
You're right. It was for Unforgiven, but he was also nominated for Mississippi Burning and I Never Sang for My Father and Bonnie and Clyde. But he's also 95 years old, so you live quite the life. And yeah, so make sure you go out and see a Gene Hackman movie. Michelle Trachtenberg passed away. I knew her from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Then she went on to do Eurotrip and Gossip Girl, which I've never watched, but I guess she was a really good villain in it. Her death is sad, too. I guess she was sick, and she had to have a liver transplant. And from what it sounds like, her body rejected it, and she passed away from that. Young, 39 years old, 37?
Yeah, I couldn't believe she was younger than me.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
But, you know, Harriet the Spy, I mean, that was a really big movie when we were young.
Yeah, well, I was like... When we were young, like, I'm used to those people being older playing young.
Yeah.
So I just assumed she was older than me.
Or then you realize, too, people, you know, we love Kiefer Sutherland. He's only, like, 50-something. And then you realize he's been acting for 40 years. And that makes sense because in Stand By Me, he was, like, 17 years old. And that was 40 years ago. So he's, like, 57, 60 years old.
Yeah. I'll never forget when I rewatched 24 and I was like, you know, this is, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I like did the math. I was like, oh my God, like Jack Bauer in the first season's like 32.
Yeah.
And I'm now 42.
Yeah.
Like I've surpassed like this dude who was apparently like a special forces guy, did all this stuff before he even went to CTU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, because when you think about it that way, you know, you go, oh, yeah, they're not really that old because you've grown up with them. You've literally have grown up with Kiefer Sutherland or, you know, even someone like Tom Cruise is 60. But it feels like he should be older because he's been in movies for so long.
Yeah, I felt like he was like in his 20s when or 30s when I was like,
yeah,
first watching like Mission Impossible 1 or something.
Well, Mission Impossible 1's 96, so 30 years ago. So yeah, I was like 32 years old.
Yeah. But that was like my parents, you know?
Yeah. And but then you think Mission Impossible came out 10 years after Top Gun. So he was like 23, 24 in Top Gun. He always seems older, you know?
Man, when I was 23, I was just like working at GameStop.
I know.
He's in Top Gun.
What have you done with your life? I agree. It's really fascinating when you think about it in that way. You know, like I said, Gene Hackman stopped making movies 20 years ago, but it doesn't seem like it was that long ago because he's in so many movies and you put them on and you go, oh, yeah, there's Gene Hackman.
Well, that's like thinking like The Dark Knight's going to be 20 in a couple of years.
It blows your mind. And I told you last week, it's been 5 years since there's been a Spider-Man movie. It's crazy. Time goes by so fast. That's why I enjoy every moment of it.
And super slow at the same time.
These are the movies we watch throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Honestly, more television because the 50th anniversary of SNL happened. And so first, before the actual special, they already aired the homecoming concert, which is great. I think I liked it more than the special because
I like Adam Sandler in it. He had a great little, or is that on the actual show?
It was on the show. Mm. But yeah, it's like this concert, like stadium style concert where they splice like. They do homages to all like the great musical acts and controversy. Like they play, you know, they don't just have like someone come out and do the thing they did on the show. They have like, what was it? Eddie Vedder singing Elvis Costello's.
Oh, cool.
Which was a controversial thing. Mm. I think someone did the Sinead O'Connor song. Mm. I forget what that was. Nirvana came out, but they paired it with Post Malone as Kurt Cobain singing Smells Like Teen Spirit, which I was like, this can't be good. And it was good. but yeah, and then they would like introduce, like they would break that up with like actual SNL cast members doing like short skits to introduce things. So like cool. Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer came out. I forget what the characters are, but they're the, like, he's got the keyboard and she's the singer and they're
wholesome
people.
They're like
people.
The church people, right?
Yeah. And then they like
Anna Gasteyer. I haven't seen her in forever.
She was all over the specials.
That's good.
Yeah. And singing a lot too, but yeah. So there's like a lot of that. And, like David Byrne came out with, someone else named Byrne. And so they did like Talking Heads songs together. And it's like the whole production design, like we're talking about, the Oscars had like that LED wall that like, so they really played with like all these great, like art design and stuff. It's like really cool. And it's also like 3.5 hours long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you get a lot, of stuff, but yeah, like, and there's this all kinds of homages to like the history of SNL and music. There's also a separate documentary about the history of SNL and music. That's also like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, I watched that. That was on NBC one night. That was really good.
Yeah.
That was really good.
Really informative stuff. Yeah. Like the Sinead O'Connor one is fascinating. It was how, like, I remember that being like this huge controversy in the 90s and like it's kind of like flipped itself to where like she's the hero now.
Yeah. Because when you see it, even when you see it, you go, that was a big deal. But yeah. I mean, I didn't understand the political uproar it caused, but you know.
Yeah. And then, of course, I watched the special itself, which I didn't like as much because I didn't feel like it really covered all the eras very well. Like, it was very much like our high school one. Like, a lot of the people who came back were either, like, super high profile, like Eddie Murphy, or they're like Will Ferrell, mm-hmm. Tracy Morgan, Anna Gasteyer from like that early 2000s run. But yeah, they're still sprinkled in here and there, like Adam Sandler or Will Forte. So those other people got like a little bit stuff. Like obviously he was sorely missing Bill Hader. But like the musical, the New York musical with like John Mulaney and everybody was great. And David Spade like leaves the whole skit entirely once he's like, I've had enough. I'm good. Doesn't finish the skit. Stuff like that is fantastic. So yeah, just, you know, it's just a cool, it's just crazy to think that that's like, you know, Star Trek is going to like hit its 60th anniversary soon, but SNL is only 10 years behind it.
Wow.
It just like, again, what is time?
Yeah.
And yeah, they also did some like, you know, they even gave like, homages to like the, you know, the stretch where like, Lorne Michaels wasn't a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was cool. But, yeah, that's, it for me.
Yeah, I didn't watch too much this week either. I rewatched Stagecoach from 1939. It's the movie that made John Wayne a star. It's a really cool Western. I mean, you have to like Westerns, but it's an interesting character study about people that have to basically, it's like Mad Max. I have to go from a town across the a desert, which the Apache Indians are, you know, chasing them, and they have to fight them and get to their destination, and you learn all this stuff about each character. And you know, John Wayne kind of set the tone for what he would be later on in his career, where it's just this macho cowboy guy, and directed by John Ford, and just really good. Definitely a very good Western from 1939. And the Criterion's great. The Criterion actually comes with a silent movie that John Ford directed as well. So you kind of get two movies for the price of one. Definitely pick that up on Criterion. And the only other thing I watched is a movie I hadn't seen in a while, because it's not good. But again, it's a Vinegar Syndrome, China O'Brien 1 and 2, that's on 4K. So I watched the first one, and it stars Cynthia Rothrock, and she is really good at the physical stuff, being a martial artist and commanding the screen when that happens. Acting, you know, it is what it is. But the movie is she is a police officer, and she's involved in a shooting, and she decides she doesn't want to be a police officer anymore. So she goes to hang out with her dad, who is the sheriff of this other town. And while she's there, her dad kind of uncovers the mob is running the town, and he goes out to his car and it blows up one day and he's killed in it. And so she decides to run for sheriff during a special election, but the mob in town is trying to rig it with the corrupt police that are already there. But she does these rallies, and every time a fight breaks out, they all do like kung fu, which, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but they do. And so like the action's really cool in it. But my favorite part is when China O'Brien, spoilers, gets elected sheriff, she's going to go clean up the town. So she needs to get, you know, new deputies, and they're going to go fight these mob and evil guys. So she deputizes all these dudes, and there's like a surfer guy, a guy on a skateboard, a dude who has only one hand, but he rides a motorcycle, and they don't wear police uniforms. It's literally them in tank tops and like with mullets. And then they go and fight all these guys. It has like a B movie charm to it that's really fun. And it's on 4K, which when you watch a movie like that in 4K, that's really well, like the scan is really good. And you have this kind of respect for the filmmakers for it, because they had such a limited budget. And I'm not saying that it's, you know, a great movie or it's going to win any, it's, you know, but it's, there's something about the charm of it. And I've said this before the last couple of weeks, but that's what I love about boutique labels like Vinegar Syndrome, is they take movies that you would never think deserves to be 4K. And that's China O'Brien 1 and 2. But not only do they give it a sweet slip cover, they put like a 60-page book in with it to give you all like the making of the movie. They have a documentary on them that are like an hour long. And they care about these because there's fans of these movies, and the people that put these together are fans as well. And that shows in the product they put out. And I mean, where the, you know, Criterion is, you know, the prestige of prestige, but doesn't mean stuff like China O'Brien, or I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm really tempted to get the Congo set. It comes, I mean,
it's Bruce Campbell's in it.
I know. And he dies really early in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's $50, but it comes in one of those magnetic clasp things, and it's so cool. And if I didn't have so much stuff that I paid for recently, I would totally get it. But every time I say, go, it's not really a movie that's worth $50, but the extras and the packaging makes it that maybe I should, because I don't want to miss out on the slipcovers.
Yeah, they go fast. So. Yeah.
Because, you know, you posted a week about the Hundreds of Beavers, and I wanted to see the movie after you explained what it is. And then when I went and talked to the lady who runs it, who's a wonderful lady, I should learn her name. She's super nice. And I asked her about Hundreds of Beavers. She said, you're in luck. It's my last slipcover. And she literally had to like pull it from underneath the counter. But that slipcover is brilliant. And not that that movie needs it, but it gives it such a collector's thing, because there's slipcovers too, are that really rigid cardboard, and they're not cheap at all.
Yeah. Sure, they're expensive to produce. But yeah, when I browse the Vinegar Syndrome site, like I see a bunch of movies I want to get.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't have that slipcover or like the special, like it kind of makes me stop and go like, eh.
Yeah. So I learned with that is go to the Denver Vinegar Syndrome, because sometimes she has them.
Yeah.
When I was in high school and my friend Brandon and I used to watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. They did this one with, there's a movie with Kathy Ireland called Alien in LA, and it's not a great movie, but I have wonderful memories of it. My favorite bit in it, there's two of them. There's this mine cart that goes by, and then Crow, he just says, "Don't ride the wild mouse, it's not safe," because this, I don't know what it's doing. And then Servo has this part where she works at this waitress, and they have this banner across the wall, and it just says burger. And Servo said, "Man, that sign really seduces me to getting a hamburger." And I remember those lines, and I didn't know Vinegar Syndrome put this out. I had no idea, because I mean, it's not like I follow the movie, but I got the app, and one day I was just flipping through the limited edition stuff, and Alien in LA popped up, and the slipcover is awesome. It's like Kathy Ireland, and it's wonderfully done. And then I click on it, and it's sold out, and I was bummed. And then a couple months ago, when I went and got Hundreds of Beavers, I'm just looking at the thing they have set up. They had one left with the slipcover. And so I totally got it. And it must have not have been very popular, because at the store, it was like $17.99. So I was stoked. But they do a great job on it, point being.
Yeah. And I went in once for when you got the Miami Connection.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, it's got that other version of it, I should get it. But yeah, they only had the jewel case version.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I was thinking about getting this, but like, it doesn't have a slipcover. And like, she's like, well, it's sold out, it's not coming back. But the next time I went in, someone traded it in with slipcover.
Oh, really?
And I was like, I'd spend like $40 on this again.
Damn.
So I was like, ugh.
Because yeah, mine is just a clamshell one.
Yeah.
Or what, I guess, I don't know what they call them. But Miami Connection.
Yeah.
But that's a movie I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Does it deserve to be on 4K? Probably not, but that it is awesome.
I got to save money, like when I got New York Ninja, like I, Twist and Shout, like I left, I watched at the C Film Center, walked next door to Twist and Shout, and they had both like the deluxe version and the jewel case version, but I was like, at the time I was like, I really shouldn't be buying like super expensive movies. Yeah. This movie sucks. But now I regret not getting the better version, because it's so
good. I have the standard version too, because I obviously got it after you told me about it.
Yeah.
I think I got mine a lot at, because I got mine at the archive, but it had to have been a year after you told me about it, because I remember, because that was the first time I went to the archive, and I walked in there and I go, you know, I think Brad told me that New York Ninja was Vinegar Syndrome. because it was on your film explosion list.
Yeah.
And I looked and it's just the normal one, but you know, that movie spending $20 on is good. Like the story behind, and I remember the lady, she was there too. She said, yeah, you know, the movie's not great. She said, but the story is really fun.
Exactly.
And the documentary on it is really cool. And the documentary is like an hour and a half long too. So I always say you get like two movies for the price of one. And I'll watch it. I'll watch the movie again because it's so ridiculous. And that they were able to cobble together a movie and I guess make a coherent plot. It's fun.
Yeah. Cynthia Rothrock. Her dub it.
She did. And so did Linnea Quigley, who's a really big horror movie actress. Who's the guy who voiced the lead character? He's pretty big, too.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, pick up Vinegar Syndrome. If you see a slipcover, you might want to get it really quickly because they do sell out really fast. Next week, Brad, we're seeing Paddington in Peru. But before that, we're going to give our listeners a treat. We actually just got done watching the Oscars, and we have commented as we watched the Oscars. You brought Oscar ballots, and you beat everybody with your predictions. How many did you get right?
I got 12 out of 23.
That's really good. Now, if you're thinking, oh, man, Ryan, you probably came in second place. No, my son, who's only saw Wicked and The Wild Robot, picked 10 out of 23. I got 8. So my boy did a really good job at guessing.
Yeah, almost.
I mean, one that cracked me up is he picked The Brutalist for, I think, best cinematography or something, and it totally won.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was score. And I go, all right, good job, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, he picked, like, Anora. Like,
yeah.
I didn't have it winning that much, and it clearly did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So spoilers for that.
Yeah, so make
now,
sure.
Now you just look forward to us talking about this.
Like, yeah.
Now you know how it goes, but.
But still, you can listen to us in real time as we're watching it, react to it.
Yeah.
We'll
give you all the little intricacies of how the Academy works. And
yeah.
Like the political infighting of like why stuff does what it does. Not really.
No, we don't know shit. So until next time, we'll see you at the movies.
Real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Can follow the plot and a real nerd. Look at all the gods. Lights, camera, action. Real nerds.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast, Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.